You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here. And those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. You need to know, if it's your first time, that you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. And you do that by going to my website. The website is kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see where it says K-Files e-zine. Just click that and subscribe. It's a two-step process. You subscribe, and then you get an email at your email address with a confirmation link that you have to click and say, yes, it was me, and I intended to subscribe, and then you'll start getting it. I want to say hello this evening to all of the folks in the Kevin Smith Show room over at Pal Talk. We have a large and growing number in the room over at Pal Talk, and I'm already getting email from some of those folks, and it's just pretty exciting, really, to tell you the truth. So hello to those folks, and glad you are aboard. You know, the other day we had that show where I talked about the fact that there are no laws of physics. There are descriptions of our current understanding, and they call those laws of physics, but they're really not laws because frequently, some really smart scientist comes up with something that the laws say, whoa, wait a minute, it doesn't happen that way. And, you know, the deal is that the universe did not attend the same universities that these PhDs did. And so, you know, the status quo guys I scorch, and the ones that step across the boundaries and say, well, hey, wait a minute, take a look at this, I applaud them. And so I want to applaud a couple of scientists over at the U.S. Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratory. They used something called an inelastic neutron scattering to show that superconductivity in a new family of iron arsenide superconductors cannot be explained by conventional theories. They are superconductive, these new materials, and they should not be, according to the theories that, you know, are the operating theories by which things have been running. They don't know why they're superconductive. They can't figure that out yet. They should not be, but they are, and highly superconductive. And it just doesn't fit. So my applause to the scientists over at the Argonne National Laboratory. Let's give them some applause there. That's the way to go, guys. That's the way progress is made. That's the way we will work ourselves out of the dump we have worked ourselves into over the past many decades. My guest this evening is going to be Barry Chamish. And Barry is without any debate whatsoever, Barry could be said to be the most controversial journalist in Israel. And it all started with some UFO reports he filed. We're going to talk about some of those this evening. We'll be back with Barry Chamish right after this. He was born in Winnipeg, Canada, and attended the University of Manitoba and the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, served in the armed service of the IDF, and after completing university and the army, in 1981, Barry Chamish founded a small press service providing reliable features for a variety of magazines. Among some of those magazines are some of these titles: The Hollywood Reporter, Screen International, Billboard, and also there were some long reports in The Atlantic, The New Republic, and Reason, and New York Newsday. It's been a while since he has written about UFOs, but from 1987 till 1999, Israel was pretty much under a barrage of UFO activity, and Barry Chamish documented the events and received worldwide recognition for his efforts. Four episodes of the NBC TV program Sightings were dedicated to his discoveries, and in 1999, Fox TV devoted a full half hour of prime time to his work. The phenomena stopped, and Barry stopped writing about it because he is a reporter and reports on events. Barry Chamish, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Glad to be back.
Maybe if I turned your volume up, people could hear you. Barry, when you were with us last time, we did get into the UFO wave that hit Israel back in that time period, and we did talk about some of this, but there was so much of it that we just couldn't cover it all. We couldn't get into all of it. And really, I think last time we focused more on giants, and we talked about tomb, or I assume it was a tomb of the Rephaim.
No, it's not a tomb. It's the Circle of the Giants.
Yeah, Circle of the Giants, yeah. But I want us to talk tonight, Barry, about this wave of UFO activity. Now, first of all, it started really in 1987. It went through 1999, and then it stopped. Have you given any thought to why it stopped?
No. I just flow with the times. There was deliberate lowering of the UFO community in Israel, and people started dropping out. But on the other hand, there was a mass media reports like there had been for the previous 13 years. They just pretty well stopped. Why? In 1999, I don't know. But it did stop. I've read reports since then, here and there, but Israel was absolutely overpowered with a UFO wave that I maintain no other country ever had. And I repeat, Israel's a tiny little country, and the neighbors, Jordan, Syria, Egypt, they didn't have this wave. It was all aimed at Israel. So it was certainly spiritual, and it may have even been divine, but it was aimed at Israel, and these were not good years for Israel. These were the sellout of Israel to the phony Oslo Peace Accord, and that's when the giants returned, when they were formulating this peace accord. My feeling is probably has an awful lot to do with a lot of corruption in the name of peace that seeped out of Israel and just brought on this wave. But this is guesswork, and I really don't like to do guesswork.
All right, well, Barry, let me ask you about the beginning of this. How did it start? I mean, what was the first thing that started to happen that got your attention as a reporter?
Well, this is Shipona Beach. We spoke about it last time. This was the burning of the image of the UFO on the beaches just outside Haifa. And let's see, I think it was September 16th, 1987. It happened twice more in a year and a half, where these UFOs were actually melting. Well, they were burning vegetation, and they were leaving very peculiar, highly magnetized particles that created images of the UFOs themselves. It began with Shikmona Beach.
All right, now...
We discussed this, by the way.
Yeah, we did.
That's Jeremiah's, the shrine of, Elijah. Elijah's shrine is just above Shikmona Beach, and we went through this. I don't think we should return to the same subject.
No, but my question is, what is it about that got your attention? I mean, is it just that it happened, or was it
Israeli news?
Okay. All right. Now,
it got everyone's attention. It the whole country was talking about it.
Now, you've sent me some photographs that we did not get into last time.
Oh, the subjects are different today.
Mm-hmm. And the photographs, some of them are labeled aliens.
Yeah, well, there was one. Again, I wrote a book called Return of the Giants. Anyone can pick it up on the internet. I'll explain that later. But these are from my book, Return of the Giants. There was one incident. Well, actually, that's not true. There were two incidents where the giants were likely photographed. Another incident happened at Kadima, and let's not confuse ourselves. There was a light at 3 in the morning in 1987 in a town called Ramat HaChayal. The whole town got up. They called it the sun in the middle of the night. That's what they called this light that hit Ramat HaChayal. Now, I sent a separate email. First of all, let's look at the lights.
Okay, these are the ones labeled alien?
That's later. First is one that's labeled Ramat HaChayal.
Okay.
The sun in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I don't see that one. Let's see.
Yeah, yes, you do.
Yep, I see it.
Double-click it, turn it on, and let's have a look at this light.
It's on the screen, Barry.
There you go. This lit up the whole town. That's 3 in the morning. This town has got this in the sky over it. Now, that's weird enough. I mean, you don't want to be woken up at 3 in the morning from this light. Now, are you having a good look at the light?
Oh, yeah.
Now, double-click what I sent you is called Alien.
All right, let me scroll up to it. Alien 1, there we go. It's up.
All right, you should see 4 pictures.
Yeah, we can look at one at a time. I've got Alien 1 up.
Well, it's not a question one at a time. It's a question that in the midst of this light, actually, I believe it was someone named Gil Barr. I'll speak about Gil shortly, but Gil Barr noted that there was not just a standard everyday gray alien figure coming out of this light, it also casts a shadow.
Okay. Now, which picture do you want us to look at to see?
Well, they're all the same picture. They're highlighted differently. But in the middle of the picture is your standard little gray figure. And in front of him is a very clear shadow made by the light behind him.
Yeah, I see.
Now, again, I think it's an extremely important picture, but the woman who took the picture, her name was Shula Cohen, started threatening to sue everybody who used her picture. Now, I wasn't frightened off. What's she going to sue me for? I mean, there are people deluded enough to believe that people would pay many thousands of dollars for their pictures, and they sue people who get in the way of their ambitions. That was Shula Cohn, and she really did scare some serious people in the Israeli UFO community from ever showing this picture again. But she didn't scare me, and she didn't scare Gil Barr. Gil Barr did the various highlights that you see in the different pictures that gives you a pretty fair idea of the proportions of this creature. One thing we know, because of the shadow in front of the, well, a little to the side, but because it creates a shadow, this thing was, in fact, a physical being of some kind that the light couldn't get through and it created a shadow. There's a lot of examination. These pictures deserve a really good look. And just keep in mind, picture number one, that's the light that it came out of, whatever this thing was.
Okay, now, when we look at picture number one, it looks like the sun. It looks like a sunset, but as you say, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay,
yeah.
Now, whenever we go and look at this picture of the alien, is that, I'm trying to position this alien, is he in that light that we're looking at in that sun?
But you won't see him. This was Gil's good work that he went examining the Ramat HaKhayal lights, and he found after playing with highlighting and contrasting and whatever had to be done, he brought this picture out. No one noticed it before Gil did.
Okay, so this alien is standing in that sun.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, don't even ask why. This is a question no one has an answer for, but he has measured it. It measures to about 3.5-4 feet tall, and he did a lot of work with the contrasting to bring out this being, whatever it is. And well, the face, you can see the face, is your standard everyday small gray face seen worldwide, with a skinny little body. He caught himself, let's put it this way, if it's not an alien, it's something that can block the light. Something physical created this thing. And you know what, I'll play with the, I'll say it's an alien. I'm sure it's an alien. The light itself is weird enough. The phenomenon of lighting up a city at 3 in the morning and scaring the willies out of the people who live in the city, I mean, that's weird enough. How would you like your city lit up at 3 in the morning by something unexplainable? And I believe this alien was captured in that light, and that's what you're looking at now.
All right. Now, in that whole event, were there any reports from people in that event that said that they saw an alien or that they were contacted
by
aliens?
No, it was not an alien.
Okay. Because I know last time we talked about several incidences of people who had contact with these aliens. And I just wondered if it was the same thing in this event. All right, now...
There's not a thing in common between this event and the events of the Circles of Kadima. Not a thing.
All right, well, now, were the Circles at Kadima, those aliens were not the little short guys, were they?
No, they were the giants.
Yeah.
This is separate.
Mm-hmm.
Israel had, that I recorded, women who would talk publicly and who admitted it happened to them but wouldn't go public. I recorded seven incidents of giants. And of these small grays, which were never as well documented, I include this picture and one other family. I started to tell you about Daryl Sims flying to Israel, but we never had the chance. You want to hear about his little adventure?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know Daryl, of course.
Yes.
All right, so talk to him next time you see him. Ask him about his adventure in Netanya. I was working at the time with a very, very nice guy. Very complicated, mind you. It was Michael Heseman. And he sent me to UFO conferences worldwide. And I always shocked the organizers by giving a really, really good speech with lots of material. They didn't know who I was after that year. I'd given speeches literally on every continent about the US, the Israeli UFO wave, and that was largely because of Michael Heseman. I told Heseman about this family in Netanya who, as usual, made the news in Israel. Don't think this is obscure stuff. This was the day-to-day. It was that common. There was another UFO story every day in Israel during this period. Anyways, there was a couple. Her name was Shosh Baron. His name was Elan Cohen, and they had a daughter named Tali. They claimed they were chased by a UFO. It was a weird story. They were taken to the hospital. Her face was all burnt. He guided her out of the hospital when they started asking suspicious questions. He went on TV to tell what had happened, and I reported this story to Michael. And Michael, I believe he paid me to write this story up. So I went to Netanya and I met the couple, and I phoned Michael back afterwards and said, I'm convinced. I said, the guy, Elan, is a little strange, but the wife is too simple to be making this stuff up. And whatever, he phoned up Daryl Sims, and Daryl Sims was going to come to Israel to investigate the Netanya case, and he stayed at my house. And we even had an evening with Daryl Sims, which my children will never forget. He put on his black lights and his fluorescent lights, and he showed how to tell if someone has been actually abducted. And we went to the Cohen Barona house, and very much like me, he was very impressed, first of all, with the mother. And he... put her under slight hypnosis. She described being chased by these creatures and how her legs felt like lead and she couldn't move. But more to the point, he asked her if she had been pricked.
Okay,
said,
Barry, we have to take a break. We'll come back right after this and hear the rest of the story. right. We are back. When we had to go away for break, Barry was telling us about Daryl Sims, and Daryl had put this lady under slight hypnosis, and you said that he asked her if she had noticed having been pricked or wounded.
Well, no, pricked, like with pins.
Yeah.
And she said, yes. We took her to her bedroom and did a skin scan. I believe it was a black light, but her arms glowed orange, and her skin was filled with these little pinpricks up and down her spine and along her legs. They were everywhere, and I put my hand under his light, and it was normal skin. Her hand was glowing orange, and I guess Daryl had seen stuff like this, but I've never seen anything like this in my whole life, and I started getting very excited. You know, you lose the researcher status when you see a thing like this, and you become the audience. Her skin was glowing orange, and it was filled with pinpricks. And again, that was stage one when I started to believe something very weird was happening in this house.
Did Daryl explain to you what that means? I mean, the pinpricks and the orange? I mean, what's the significance of that?
He doesn't know. Uh-huh. I mean, he can guess. There's no definitive answer to it. To what this is all about. He just said it's common in cases like this. But something quite outstanding happened, even better than the orange skin. They warned us ahead of time that when these spirits or beings, they called them in Hebrew chazarim, which really is aliens. They said they come and leave a horrible smell. And, all right, I can live with that. So a little later in the evening, I'm standing by the window, and I get this stink in my nose. I mean, burning tires is a description of this horrible stench. And I looked around thinking there might have been an electrical appliance burning. I looked at plugs, and I saw that's not what was happening. So I just turned to Dale, and I told him they're here. I've got them. I smell them. They're here. And then the smell slowly wafted around the room. We found it in four different spots, but as soon as I smelled that, I just had to ask, what kind of a haunted house did I walk into? I mean, this was more than just convincing that something very strange was happening to that family. And then we met the daughter, Tally, and she drew a picture of the UFO that kidnapped her all the time. It was shaped like a clam, and it was pretty small. And she described the armrest, and it had buttons, and there were two of these creatures, one named Shimon and one named Machluf. And she gave thorough descriptions of their personalities. Shimon was a good guy, Machluf wasn't very good. And we eventually sent Tally's story and her pictures to Michael. And when he saw them, he said, "That's it, I'm coming to Israel. We're going to get to the bottom of whatever is happening to this family." Daryl goes back to Houston with a very good case, and now Michael Hesman comes to Israel. Now, I arranged the trip for him, and he used to pay me pretty generously, besides being a friend He had a magazine in Germany, and I supplied him the very, very strange stuff coming out of Israel. I forget where I read it, but a family had taken a picture on a beach in Netanya, a husband and a wife. And in the background, they didn't see it. Nobody saw them, but there were the UFOs that Tali drew. Exactly. I mean, they were clouds in the sky. And Michael got the picture, and he put it in his magazine, and I've got the magazine. If someday somebody really wants to investigate what went on in Israel, I've got these pictures. There was something going on in Netanya. A family was haunted, spooked. The daughter, Michael said this is just a hybrid, half alien, half human girl. You know, I mean, that's how he looked at it. But nonetheless, something very, very peculiar was happening in their home. And that picture, and I'm telling you, Tali drew, let me describe the picture.
Okay.
They're at a beach. They're wearing bathing suits. The husband's got his arm around his wife, and they're smiling. And in the background, in the sky, are these two UFOs, which nobody saw, but they were duplicates for what Tali drew. And, well, this, in essence, was the story. It gets more interesting, but this was the story of Daryl Sims' visit to Netanya. And Netanya, by the way, is about 10 miles from Kadima, where the Giants landed.
Now, was there any sort of kind of a geographical epicenter for all of this phenomena? Was it kind of...
Yeah, Kadima.
Okay, so from 1987 through 99...
No, Kadima was 1993 and 4. They were... Well, actually not. Now I have to go into a whole history of when the first Kadima UFO was filmed, which was in 1991. Let's say from 1991 to 94, Kadima was the center of it all.
Okay, but these UFOs were not being seen all over Israel. It was sort of localized.
Sure they were.
Oh, they were. Okay.
You bet they were.
Now, what would you say in that period of time was the most spectacular, to you, in your opinion, the most spectacular, amazing UFO story that you covered and
well,
that you wrote about?
The story, I know, but the UFOs themselves, when it comes to the, well, okay, go into the pictures that I sent you and look for Chatzor. You'll have two pictures.
All right.
Khatzor.
Okay, I've got one. Let's see. Kadima Chatzor. There we go. I've got.
You should have two of Chatzor.
Yeah.
I think they're separated a bit.
Yeah. Which one do you want me to show?
Both of them.
All right. Well, the first one I have up is an object that's it's small and up in the left-hand corner of the picture.
Well, it's enormous, in fact. Let's see. Put up the other one now. There's a close-up.
All right. It's up.
There you go. Now, this was the most spectacular UFO seen in Israel, in my opinion, and there were some pretty spectacular UFOs. This is in August of 1997 at Kibbutz Chatzor, which is very, very north of the... It's on the border between the plains and the Negev Desert. It's Kibbutz Chatzor. I won't do the whole story of how I got films. I got hours of films. There was a lady whose camera was used. She claimed the film was hers. And then there was the a cameraman. He was a 17-year-old kid at the time. Avichai Shua, that was his name. Whatever, this UFO was seen in the sky above Kibbutz Hatzor for 3 nights. On the first night, a very, very few people saw it, but Avichai was one of them, and he filmed it without any dramatic effects on the first night, but he told everyone in the kibbutz what he had seen. The next night, there were about 60 people watching this enormous object. Now, what you're seeing, and by the way, I'm going to leave you a way to get hold of this DVD I have, where you can actually see the Katsor UFO on your DVD set. But in short, what you're seeing is about 10% of it maximum. The UFO was also filmed at daybreak, and you saw what a monster this thing was. A huge, huge UFO. But what was lit up is what you're seeing right now. This was night two. It was on the third night, there were already well over 100 people watching this thing and debating what was over the kibbutz. You had the whole kibbutz outside watching this thing. I've got 5 hours of film. So they filmed it at least for 5 hours. It was one of the most well-corroborated and thoroughly witnessed UFOs. But look at that thing in the sky. When have you ever seen a UFO look like this thing?
I've never seen anything like that.
Now, remember, that's only like 10%. That was the illuminated part of the UFO. But nonetheless, it's got windows or vents or whatever it's got. It's got three rows of them. It's a dastardly picture. I think that looks like a skull. Other people have said called it the balcony UFO because they see balconies along these three rows of very odd-shaped windows. But nonetheless, this was one of the most spectacular UFOs ever filmed. I've got hours and hours of this UFO. Michael Heseman and other people swear they see an actual pilot, but I don't believe it. I don't believe
I don't see one.
But nonetheless, this UFO has been examined many, many times. Bruce Maccabee examined it for a UFO show and said nothing in the sky should look like this. He determined that it was a true blue UFO. This is the Katsor. Well, you have got two shots of the Katsor UFO. Are you impressed by them?
Well, I have to say, I've never seen anything like that. You know, it's an amazing shot. We have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue with Barry Chamish. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I am the host, Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is Barry Chamish. Barry, before we move on to any of these other really amazing photographs that you've sent me, I have a couple of questions about this one at Hatzor.
Yeah.
First, did this thing land?
No.
Okay. And you said the whole kibbutz was out. How many people is that? How many people saw that?
Oh, I've heard people talk all the way to 300. I think a fair figure would be something like 100, 150.
But still a very significant number of people saw it.
Yeah, the whole kibbutz was outside looking at this thing. It was, and filming it, no less. It was a very well-documented and very strange UFO.
Well, now, you sent me another picture that is also one that I have to say I've never seen anything like that. And I'd like to go to that. It's, I'm going to try and pronounce this,
Kochavayir. Yeah, these were also, I sent you one from Kochavayir and one from Sfat. There were fruit-shaped UFOs that are absolutely spectacular. I sent you one picture. They were, again, three nights over the town of Kochavayir, filmed by an 18-year-old named Elad Niger. This was in the summer of 1997. They were analyzed by Bruce McAbee and Michael Lindenman and on Fox TV as, you know, some of the most convincing and spectacular UFOs ever. Look, it looks like an apple. I sent you the Kochavayir UFO looking like an apple. Before your very eyes, it turns into a pineapple. The colors change. It's got a crown on top. It changes. It's got spikes within the crown. The number of spikes change. This happened over three nights. And the Jer was a very good filmmaker. He would take the camera and he would film the street. He would film the bus at the bus stop. And then he would lift the camera in the air and you would see this thing. His home was in a place called Far Saba. This was over Kochavayir. And it's just part of this really, and of course Sfat had the same apple shaped or a similar apple shaped craft in the same summer. And those are the two pictures you're looking at now.
Now, was this, when you look at the picture, the one in
Kochavayir.
When you look at that, you see a lighted area at the bottom that's sort of half moon shaped and has a little notch at the bottom. And then you see that crown on the top. Is that two separate UFOs or is that one UFO?
It's one UFO.
Okay. And it continued to change and morph and
for three nights. Filmed with witnesses, the works. A very, very thorough and very beautiful UFO. I mean, this was spectacular. And it was fruit-shaped. That's how most people saw it. One minute, a pineapple with the crown, and the next minute, an apple with the wick. That's how people everywhere describe that UFO.
Now, the other one, similar. Let's see. Let's get it up here.
Yeah, it's not. It was one night over Sfat. There was an apple-shaped UFO. So I put it in for comparison. We had two incidents of fruit-shaped UFOs in Israel, but the big one is Kochavayir.
All right. Now you've got obviously you've spent a lot of time looking at these photographs and the videos from which they came. Do you think these are craft or do you think these are living beings?
They're craft. They're not living beings. They're craft. Within them, there are some sort of living beings. These are, you know, the one at Kochavayir was, I'm taking a guess now, but it was probably 300 yards long.
What about these from, I think it's pronounced Nahum? Nahum?
No, don't jump. I'll
okay.
guide you.
All right.
I'll guide you. These are complicated stories. Don't jump to Nahum yet. You know what? Let's make life simpler for your listeners. You want the pictures and the explanations. I have a book called Return of the Giants, and here's how you get it. You go to www.lulu.com. When you get to lulu.com, there's a little box that says search. Write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's Chamish. It'll take you to my books, including Return of the Giants. And I would suggest you actually get the color version. It's a little expensive, but you can see these things in color. If anybody wants my DVD, it's not a Hollywood movie, but it, many people have enjoyed this DVD. It's about an hour long, filled with these crap. Just phone me. 904-315-8079. I got to repeat that then. Phone me at 904-315-8079. And for $10, I'll send you the DVD. That'll take care of some questions. Now, you want it to open up, Nakum. Don't open. Before I tell you to open, we're going to get lost. All right, let's do Nakum. Right. Are they up?
They will be shortly. Let's see. Let me scroll down to them. And the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, these are in downtown Tel Aviv, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, November 17th, 1997. An elderly, very bright elderly man named Nakum Solomon photographed a swarm of flying things over Tel Aviv. Now, I call them flying brains or flying sponges because they look like sponges or brains.
Yeah, they do.
Yes, they flew either individually, but there were times when there were a dozen of these things in the sky. And again, I assume to hide themselves or appear to be a cloud, they put smoke around the craft of some kind. But Nakum Solomon was smart enough to videotape these things in the sky, in Tel Aviv's afternoon sky. And this is what was flying. I mean, the nerve of these beings, they didn't even care that everyone would see them. But I guess most people didn't. Most people assumed they were explainable, or else they were clouds. But they're clearly not clouds, and they're clearly something in the sky that's impossible to explain.
How big are they?
Again, that's a little rough. I asked Nakum about that, and he remembered in this video he gave me that they're flying occasionally in swarms. Now, his guess is they were in the sky about 200 meters up. That's all. 200 to 300 meters. And he guessed they were about the equivalent of 12 feet long.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Again, that's a very, very tough thing to estimate. And there isn't a lot to compare to in the Tel Aviv sky. There aren't airplanes chasing these things. So we're going to leave that up for grabs. But they were big enough for some sort of being to sit inside of them.
Well, I tell you what, you know, you called them flying brains or flying sponges, and it really has that appearance.
Well, Nakum was very nice to me. To get these films, I had to sign releases for mostly for sightings, but also for other people, including Michael Hesman. We had to go and get these people to agree to give up the rights to these films. It was very time-consuming, as a matter of fact, but they did give up the right. But Nakum was very very humble. He didn't ask for anything in return, and he just gave up these films. That's what I recall about him. He had an apartment in North Tel Aviv in a sort of a fashionable area, and that's where he filmed them.
All right, we have a break that's going to start. Well, it has just started. And we'll be back on the other side of this break. We'll take your telephone calls if you have questions or comments for Barry Chamish. We are back, and my guest this evening is Barry Chamish. We're talking about this UFO wave, this barrage of UFOs that took place in Israel from 1987 through 1999. We're going to open up the telephone lines in just a moment, and before we do that, I want to make sure that everyone understands how we're going to play this game tonight. Anyone is welcome to call 1-800-605-4461. If these this little group of guys that have been calling in with the prank calls, you want to call, do it. But here's the deal. You call a prank call in, your telephone number goes up on the screen for my worldwide audience to see and for any of them to respond to directly. So you're agreeing to that if you call. All right, it's on the screen, it's on the website, and I've just announced it. So if you call and do your thing, your phone number goes public. All right, 1-800-605-4461. If you have a question or a comment for Barry Chamish, that number is toll-free. All right, let's go to the telephone and... to our caller. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. If you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling. Okay, let's go to the next caller. All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, well, I'm not really sure what's happening there. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, well.
Have you got harassment on your show?
Oh, we get harassment frequently.
It's an old trick. You get a few phones, you dial your number, and you cut off your show.
All right. All right.
And you laugh about it. It can cut you off. It works very effectively.
Yeah, it does. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Oop.
You're live on the air.
Hi, this is Malcolm.
Yeah, Malcolm. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Montreal.
All right. What's on your mind this evening, Malcolm?
I have this question.
Is this about Chad's Gap?
Yeah.
Okay. I announced earlier, just before you called, it's on the screen, and I'm going to give you a pass on this one, just so everybody understands. I don't know why you guys want to play this game, but let me explain. The next one that calls, the telephone number goes on the screen for the whole world to see. So, do you want me to put your telephone number up for everybody to see where they can call you back?
Is this about Chad's Gap?
Yeah, okay, I didn't think so. All right, you need to spread the word. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yes, this is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm not going to pull a prank on you. Don't worry.
All righty.
Hello, Barry. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, earlier in the show, you were talking about the Giants, the return of the Giants, and you also talked about these little gray beings that apparently smelled horrible. What this tells me is that we might be having visitations from the Anunnaki, the ancient Anunnaki of old.
And oh, I don't believe that. That's the Shakaya Sitkin nonsense. That's not what I believe.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin, for the call. All right. 1-800-605-4461. 1-800-605-4461 is the number to call if you have a question or if you have a comment.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to add a couple things. When I was in Israel, two groups tried to exploit my work and get me to to give a big commercial for their work. One were the aliens who dressed like Buddhists and think that the Holy Temple Mount is going to be a new UFO site when their Messiah returns.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going?
Yep, caller, hang on. Barry, go ahead.
Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you I watch the show every week. Big fan. I'd like to share a testimonial here.
Okay, caller, go ahead. First, your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm Matt. I'm from Utah.
Okay.
Well, last week I was walking back from skiing, and I was walking by Chad's Gap.
All right. Now, you obviously haven't been listening to the show. It's up on the screen, and I've announced it over and over. And by calling in with this, you have agreed. Your telephone number is now going up on the screen for my worldwide audience to see and respond to. Okay.
I just won X Games.
Yeah, Your telephone number, 450-464-7407, is now going up on the screen. Going up on the screen. Okay, I'm sorry, Barry. We got some idiots out there. What they don't know is that a criminal investigation has already been started against these guys. But
I'm coming in late, and this is I don't think you should take phone calls. That's number one at all. It disrupts the show, and it doesn't help. And when you get these phone callers, and secondly, you get the local phone company, whoever is sponsoring their phones, and you make a complaint for harassment, and they will, in fact, investigate. But if you have nothing but cranks, it's not doing your show any good.
Well, that's true, and it's just the sort of thing that there's really not a lot I can do about once we open up the phone lines for people to call in. Well, but
I'd say suspend that part of the show unless you can sort this out, get a producer to filter the callers. I would suspend this part of the show.
Yeah. Well, okay, you and I will continue. The prank caller that just called in needs to know your telephone number is now scrolling on the screen for the worldwide audience to see. Two can play the game. All right. Barry, where do you want to go next? What pictures, what photographs do you want to go to next?
All right. I mean, let's get back into a little rhythm here. This whole episode is terrible for the rhythm of your show. And as I said, you just got to suspend it to keep the rhythm of the show. Just one question. Why are they picking on this show?
This started, I don't really know why, but it started on an internet forum group, and it's just their little joke. They think it's fun. They think they're going to enjoy this. However, the forum owner, by allowing that on his forum, he's part of the conspiracy. And so by the time this is over, the forum owner will be thoroughly investigated, possibly shut down and sued. And then these people individually will go after.
A lot of time and a lot of aggravation.
Yeah, it happens every couple of years.
Change the phone number and see if anything can be done that way. But for now, in this section of the show, you've got to simply sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah, for right now, we will. But we'll see if that's what they want. If they want their phone numbers on the screen, all they have to do is call in and keep this up.
What will that do?
Yeah.
Who's going to phone them?
Well, I don't know, but it's out there now. So, you know, whatever. Okay, let's go back to UFOs. What's up next?
The next set of pictures go to Gil Barr. Recently on Israeli aircraft plane chases UFO.
Okay, I've got some F-16s. Is that what we're talking about?
No, I don't think they're F-16s. I've examined these pictures have been examined by experts everywhere. When I was in Italy, I spoke at a conference in I spoke actually a few times in Italy. I think it was at Pisa, where an Italian Air Force officer came up to me, and he was fascinated by that part of the presentation. And he said, "No," he said, "the Israeli Air Force plane was a surveillance plane. It's got four engines, and he saw them, and whatever." It was probably a surveillance plane, and not an actual jet. This is my conclusion. It may have been a jet surveillance plane, but I don't think it was actually a fighter plane. And there's a difference. I don't know if there's any attempt to actually bring down this UFO, but there you go. I mean, there's the disc in the middle of the sky, and in picture one, it's at the left of the Israeli surveillance plane is on the left of the UFO, and then the UFO gets just tired of it and swirls around, and now the surveillance plane is on the right of the UFO. This, again, if anyone phones for the DVD, it's quite a fascinating thing to watch, an actual Air Force plane and an actual UFO playing a cat and mouse game, with the UFO being certainly the mouse. It's scurrying away every which way, and the cat has no chance to do whatever it was planning to do with it. I have no idea what a person does with a UFO in your sky above the city, but the background of this story. And again, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, but as far as I know, it's the only video of an Air Force plane interacting with a UFO. And there you've got it. Now, the photographer became a good friend of mine. He was the one who managed to filter out the image of the the gray, whatever that thing was, in Ramat HaKhayal. We don't know exactly, but I think it was an old-fashioned gray. That was Gil Barr who did the filtering to reveal this. Gil Barr was on his balcony. It was 4:00 in the afternoon in 1997. He looked in the sky and he saw the disc. He got out his video camera. Then came the Israeli jet. On the film, you'll hear him screaming for his mother to come out. Now, Gil was a very brilliant guy, and we went on a lot of adventures together He didn't want to go to university, and the parents were worried about the UFO stuff, and I promised the parents that their son would go to university. There was a very big personal story between Gil and I, but this is Gil's triumph. He actually filmed, I think for the first time anywhere, an Air Force plane approaching a UFO.
Now, you said these are not F-16s, but you can verify that it is Israeli Air Force.
Well, you certainly don't see the Star of David on the side of the plane, but if you're in Israel and if you have a jet overhead, it's an Israeli Air Force plane.
Yeah, it would have to be, wouldn't it?
I don't know of any other jets allowed in the sky.
Now, the guy that filmed this, was he able to give any estimates of the size of this UFO?
Again, you have something you can relate the disc to, and that's the plane flying above it. And it is much larger than the plane flying above it. Now, even giving for the relative distance, the Air Force plane was much higher. But nonetheless, the UFO must have been a fairly significant size, at least as big as the plane chasing it.
Do you... Now, he filmed it. Were there other reports of people around that saw this from other angles, maybe some other video that
nope,
was taken?
Nope.
No?
Nope. It was his. Don't think that people stare up in the sky and expect to see a UFO and an Air Force jet. To put the two together requires a very special and a very trained mind. He was the right person to make this film. It would have gone unnoticed without him.
Okay. Where do you want to go from this one?
Well, what's left of the photographs?
Okay. We have Gil Gall.
We touched on that last time. I think we have Bates Arzier.
Yeah, that photograph is up now.
All right. Now, this, again, it involves Gil was, no, nope, they were different. They were different reporters. Now, this goes back to the, this goes to 1998. There were two crop circles in the Jezreel Valley. The first one was in the spring. That was at Tel Zarzir. And you have a picture of Tel Zarzir in front of you. Now, this, believe it or not, Tel Zarzir is a Druze village in northern Israel. Well, in the Jezreel Valley. Now, I could do a whole show on the very different reactions that the non-Jews had. They had plenty of incidents. But what it comes down to is they didn't see them as UFOs. They didn't see them as aliens. They saw them as jinns, as spirits. The word genie, I think, comes out of the word jinn, D-J-I-N-N. Which is, it's Barbara Eden sitting in a bottle. These are jinns. They're spiritual beings. Now, at Bates Arzier, they had a terrific crop circle, but it was more than a circle. Gil Barr was there. I introduced him to Nancy Talbot. Nancy Talbot was the researcher for the sighting show. At Bates Arzier, there were seven pods. He called them pods in the ground. Four larger than the other three. they were holes surrounding this very peculiar crop formation. Within the holes, there was a white powder which he sent to Nancy Talbot, and it had an unusual, unattainable, microscopic cellular molecular formation they'd never seen before. See, all of, wherever we went, I had built up enough people in the scientific community to send samples of everything we found to people who could see if they were real or normal or uninteresting or interesting. And with Beit-Zazir, what made this interesting is the town thought they were haunted. I actually put one of the young men, his name was Golan. I did a show called Giants. That's what the name of the show was. And we interviewed him. He said the whole town for 2 weeks after this thing landed in the field had spirits. He said 7 foot tall spirits in their homes. And he said the town was haunted, and people were terrified to even open their doors. And he gave this explanation that since this thing landed in the town of Beit-Zazir, these spirits, these giant spirits, 7 feet tall, were coming through windows and doors and haunting the whole town. So that made Beit-Zazir an unusual incident, and one that the networks I was working with felt was very worth recording. But in September, it was on Rosh Hashanah, the Beit-Zazir incident was on Passover. About 6 months later in Rosh Hashanah, I get a phone call in the morning from two UFO people I work with, and they said, we've got another formation landed last night in Tel Adashim. And we found out from it, doesn't matter how, but he said, do you want to join us to investigate this latest crop formation? And I said yes. And naturally, I asked my two children along. I think he was 7 and she was 6, I think younger. 1997, 7 and 6. And we all went to Tel Adashim, which was, again, 5 miles or so from Beit-Zazir. Now, the whole family walks through a little bit of greenery, and we were astounded by this thing we had seen. Astounded. I had never been in a crop formation. It wasn't a crop circle. This was a formation. And
yeah, it's got an odd shape to it.
No, well, yes, but this is a different shape. Mm-hmm. We're now at Tel Adashim. We've left Beit-Zazir now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at Tel Adashim, my children were stunned. I was, when we walked into this, now, first of all, it was in corn. And the corn was as high as an elephant's eye. Except where this formation was created, and the corn was lying on the ground.
Barry, we got to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Barry Chabish, and we are talking about this amazing wave of UFOs that hit in Israel, took place in Israel back in between 1987 and 1999. Barry, when we had to go away for break, you were telling us about this other crop formation.
Yeah, well, this one was a family affair. I had been taking my kids on my UFO adventures, and they had become very good at finding suspicious, out-of-the-ordinary pieces of evidence. So we walk into this very large formation with a very peculiar shape, and I asked them to just go looking for clues, and they took it as a tremendous adventure. I mean, this thing, first of all, to describe it, you have a cigar-shaped middle part that was 66 feet from one tip to the other. We measured everything. We did graphics. We tried to measure the actual shape of this formation. Now, on either side of this middle cigar-shaped, what would you call it? I would call it the body of the craft. That's what I would call it. On either side were the equivalent of wings, below it and above it, which were all a third smaller. And we looked in the soil. We want to see if the corn was dead. You know, the usual. We spoke to people who lived in Tel Adashim, tried to get some clues. I assure you, this was not made by human beings. This was a very, very large and complicated formation. So we finished the day. Everyone is dead tired. So we go into a restaurant, and I start looking at the pictures, and I figured out what we had just seen, and I convinced my... No, Gil was there with... Gil was one of the people there as well, Gil Barr. I said, you gotta look at what we just saw. The shape is the profile of the craft. We had that in Israel at Shikmona Beach, where the profile of the craft were twice burnt into the sands at Shikmona Beach. They were like 15 feet in diameter. They weren't monstrous like this thing. But I said to my colleagues, I said, we've got Shikmona Beach again. What they did in this field was make an imprint of their craft. And then I showed the graphics. The middle was the body of the plane, and there was a dome below and above it. I said, this is what we were walking through. An imprint of the craft. And that's basically the story of Tel Adashim.
And so this craft was approximately then, based on those measurements, about 60 feet long.
66.
66 feet long. And how wide?
Pardon me?
How wide was it?
You couldn't tell it. Well, as a matter of fact, you could tell. You could make a mathematician could turn that into a circle and figure it out, but I never did that.
Yeah. Now, Barry...
I assumed that 66 feet from one tip to the other, that the entire circle was also 66 feet from one end to the other, and you could figure out how big that craft was. It was a pretty...
pretty good size.
It was a pretty roomy vehicle.
Yeah, it was pretty good size. Barry, during all that period of time, now we saw the pictures of the Israeli Air Force plane checking out the UFO, or that's what it appears to be doing in the photographs. But during all this period of time, from 1987 till 1999, did the Israeli Defense Ministry or the Air Force or anybody,
No.
they never said anything about all of this?
No. this is a whole story. I think I told it last time. As it turns out, I was a soldier in the Israeli Air Force. I shot missiles, and I interviewed pilots. We would get lectures. The pilots would tell us what to watch out for and how to down this plane and the weak spot in this plane and whatever we were supposed to know about the enemy's planes. Now, what I would do, since I was in uniform and we were in the same service together, after these lectures, I would wait and I would talk to the pilots. And they would be far, far more open with me than they would be with the media. It was just two soldiers talking. And I would ask them, have you ever had your plane scrambled to chase a UFO? And they all did. They all told me stories. I got three separate pilots and three separate stories. This was something that every pilot, well, I'm generalizing from three, but apparently that the pilots were scrambling and chasing UFOs very consistently in Israel, and it was not known to the general public.
Why do you think they were keeping this quiet?
Oh, I don't know that. I spoke to people in the Air Force magazine. One lady interviewed me at quite a length. She was going to do an article on all the UFOs being seen in Israel for the Air Force magazine. And she told me that there's a whole department in the Air Force that actually does take care of the issue of UFOs. And she says they have never said, nobody knows where they are, and nobody knows who their commander is. She said she found out that there is a unit, and they are investigating this, but she can't find out a thing. And this was Air Force press.
Hmm. And she was never able to publish this article?
Yeah, she published it.
Yeah?
I said nice, smart things, and it went out in the Army magazine. But she didn't have, you know, she had civilian knowledge. She got no military knowledge.
Did she tell you the name of the group within the Air Force that handles all this UFO information?
Yeah, it's in my book. Somewhere it's buried in my book, Return of the Giants. I'll remind people again, to get that book, you go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. You'll see a box that says search right in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, and you'll see a book called Return of the Giants. My little interview with her is in that book.
All right. Now, we did touch on this last time. We got a lot of new listeners that weren't with us last time, but we've mentioned here tonight several times the Giants. So I want us to spend just a little bit of time talking about what's that about. When you say the Giants, what are we talking about?
How much time do we have?
Well, let's see. We've got 20 minutes left in the show. No. Yeah,
look,
20.
This is a very long and complicated story. In 1993, from March to July, there was a wave of 39-year-old women who didn't know each other, who had encounters with 7-foot beings that should not have been in their homes. Outside their homes, there were crop circles with shards of silicon in the circles, and an oil that was too highly imbued with cadmium. This pattern repeated itself time and time again, and this, of course, was my real adventure into UFOs. I would be at Kadima once a week for inside a crop circle or interviewing a witness. The sighting show came to Israel, and they nailed the story. They were very, very careful. They asked four of the women, actually it was Shoshana Tzipporet, Batya Shimon, five of the women, to draw the giants. Each of them had a separate story, by the way. And the stories overall are not all that profound. Whatever they were doing there, they left no real clue what it could be. But nonetheless, the women drew remarkably similar figures, all five of them. I believe three or four of the pictures were shown on the screen of sightings. These women did know each other. Now, the possibility of a conspiracy was so remote. What it involves is seven women who don't know each other getting together one night and deciding from their normal white-collar jobs they're going to switch career directions and fool the entire nation of the giants had landed mostly in their bedrooms. The likelihood of these seven women ever meeting in their entire lives was very close to impossible. Without the giants, because of the giants, they met in television studios and the likes. The fact of the matter is it was an extremely convincing argument that these women were telling the truth. And by the way, they were telling the truth.
All right. Now, did any of them describe them other than 7 feet tall? Did they describe any of the, like, facial features? Or
they described all of the facial features. All of them did. They all said the same thing. Barely any nose, barely any lips, big black eyes, bald head, metallic clothing. They floated rather than walked. They all said these things, all of them. They all said the same thing.
Now, the first one of these that you heard, how did it strike you? The very first one, did you think, maybe this is not real?
Well, it took me a while. My research took such a long time. But the first one that I met with Tzipporet Carmel, she had pictures of the landing site. She took me into them. The ground was desiccated after a year. Nothing grew in it. She had done a very good job of documenting her two. She had two visitations.
Okay, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. The Kevin Smith Show. Before we continue, we're on final approach here. We just have a few minutes left. Before we continue with Barry Chamish, I offer to my legitimate, real audience my sincere apologies for the idiots. Unfortunately, there are, psychos on the internet. However, as I said, I can't stop them from calling. And when they do call, however, part of what's coming their way is their number gets published right up on the screen, and the caller ID information goes right up on the screen. And, if that's what they want, we certainly can provide them with all the free publicity they wish to have. We'll just let the criminal investigation take its course. All right, we're back with Barry Chamish, and Barry, you were telling us about what these women said about these giants.
Yeah, I think I finished that already.
All right. So after you, the first one you heard, you sort of felt like, and then it was a pretty strange story.
She had documented it thoroughly, and I believe every word she said.
Oh, okay. And then all of them got together finally.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say I had to travel all over Israel to meet them.
So there was never a time when these ladies met?
There was one TV show where Tzipporah, Shosh, well, three of them met on one TV show. Other than that, they didn't know each other.
And yet their stories were all amazingly the same.
Yes, and they all had the same crop circles, and they all had the same evidence. By all standards of good journalism, this was a closed case. There were giants running around Israel in 1993.
And this also was never addressed by the IDF?
No. IDF never addressed anything, ever.
Now, in the reports, because the as I understand what I've read and what you've told me, the media over there did report these things, right?
The media made a great deal they took a great deal of effort to tell these stories, and a lot of reporters, there was one, David Ronan from Mariv, was given a whole column in the Weekend magazine to write about UFO updates in the country.
Now, you've lived there, you've lived here. The media here doesn't seem to show that kind of interest, and they don't have that level of journalistic respect for the subject of UFOs. What do you think is the difference?
Well, it was only for a short period before the media shut off the UFO, even talk about it. They disgraced it, they mocked it. It was a genuine campaign in the year 2000 to put a stop to this UFO nonsense, and they put it out of their misery. The media, for a very short period, were very liberal about getting to the bottom of this wave, and then the words came from very high up to put an end to it. And by the year 2000, the papers were no longer reporting anything to do with UFOs, which is part of the reason, I guess, the wave might have disappeared. The news sources dried up, and we couldn't find out. We couldn't find out personal encounters because they were no longer being published.
Barry, in Israel, do they have organizations there that are sort of the counterpart, the Israeli version of, like, MUFON is here?
There was. There still is some sort of association. But again, in the 1990s, you had a very tight community working for a brief period for communal truth, to get to the bottom of what's going on in Israel and the skies above it. And it was broken up, and the infiltrators were forced upon us, and there was divisiveness and division, and it wasn't all natural. A lot of it was being encouraged. And then by the year 2001 or 2, that whole community was as good as broken up.
Now, do you think that was a concerted effort on the part of the government to do that?
Of course, it was a concerted effort. They used the television stations that they owned to put an end to the UFO subject in Israel. It's gone. Whereas in the 90s, the whole public was talking about the possibility that Israel was being visited, and today, no one is discussing it. Without my book, I think this whole era of Israeli UFO life would disappear forever. But luckily, my book is out there, so someone will remember it, hopefully.
Barry, we only have a few minutes left. I would like for you to tell us how to get the book and the DVD again before we run out of time.
Well, the book, go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. When you get there, you'll see a box that says search. Write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That'll take you to my books. Return of the Giants is both in black and white color. Black and white is not expensive. Color is a bit expensive, but in this case, I think it's worth it. Go to my website, www.barrychamish.com. It'll tell you how to get a hold of me and order the DVD. I think it'll be really useful to order the DVD.
All right. And the DVD is $10, you said, right?
Yeah, that's all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Barry, do you have any plans? If let's say that there was another wave of UFO activity in Israel, do you have any sort of plans on the shelf to, you know, yeah, I would go back over and investigate that again, or are you through with this?
I'm through with it.
Okay.
I'm not going back to Israel until there's a revolution and the governors of the country have been changed and are put on trial. Go to my website again and you'll see my real argument with the leadership of Israel. Remember, my UFO book was a sideline. The number one book that I wrote, number one in Israel, translates to seven languages, is Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin? And since we are not going to discuss the subject, I'll give you the answer. Israel's president, Shimon Peres, organized the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. You can put that book at lulu.com.
I would think that when you publish that, things must have gotten pretty rough for you because...
No, it got great. I was a celebrity. The whole country knew me. It got rough many years later when I covered essentially the murder of Ariel Sharon once again by Shimon Peres and his hit squad. That's when there were a couple of attempts on my life and I just got out of there. I just snapped and got out of there.
We're almost out of time, but I got to ask, don't you fear like a lawsuit or anything over that?
Over what?
Saying the name and putting it in print?
I don't write anything that's libelous. I'm a very good journalist, and there's not a chance that would happen. Not a chance. Everything
right.
that I write my books, I stand by.
All right. Barry, stay on the line with me. Folks, that's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. We'll see how many idiots we can catch tomorrow night, and I'll make them famous right there on the screen. All right, until then, so long, everybody.